The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
John Anik, Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
You want a podcast? Great. So you have some audio on your website that nobody goes to.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, is it good to be with you? Is it good to be with you? It is Monday, May 27, 2019, episode 202 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. You can blame TJ DeSantis for last week. He took a vacation with his family. We trotted out a best of episode. The masses are upset, but what are you going to do about it? Big birthday for Ken Flo on Sunday, by the way. Happy birthday, kid.
I just feel so old right now. It's ridiculous. See, this is what happens when we take it easy on TJ and we treat him like gold and he takes off on us.
He was like, I'm gone for 11 days. I mean, that is just a long time. But hey, you know, bankroll's fatter than mine with those deep pockets. You do 11 days at Disney World. I understand.
Hey, I want to say, I just want to point out, I left you for 11 days. You left me for a year.
Oh, man.
Oh, that was good. That was very good.
You win
good.
Again, TJ. You win again. Whether it's an MMA history lesson or us leaving you for a year, you win again. We also missed Ray Longo's birthday last week, by the way. So please remind me, Flo, when we get there at the end of the show today. But today is Memorial Day. Yesterday we were honoring Ken Flo. Today we honor those who died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. And, you know, today's the federal holiday, obviously, and everybody's posting on Instagram and rightfully so. But this is a gratitude I know that you feel every day, right, as we sit around and enjoy things like freedom. And for those of us that didn't make that sacrifice, and certainly for those of us that didn't make that ultimate sacrifice, there's part of this that we can't relate to. I'll just say, when you tell a 7-year-old girl, as I've said to my daughter, that something like freedom isn't guaranteed, you know, she freaks out, right? And you just sometimes, I think, when you're a parent and you get older and you see your kids just have freedom when other children don't, it crystallizes it for you. So thank you to those who made the ultimate sacrifice. Hopefully this free content, you know, is here for you if you're still serving, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, going to the military was something that I contemplated. I've always had such respect for all the warriors that have lived and died for this country. And we are eternally grateful for all of those that have served, all of those that are currently serving. But when you're talking about the ultimate sacrifice, man, those are people that truly believed in this country, truly believed in freedom and all those things. And we're just so thankful to have them.
And there's a tremendous bond, obviously, between a lot of UFC fighters. I know you've had a chance to see the troops at some point in time. We've done some Fight for the Troops events. You know, my bucket list as far as things UFC related, people ask me, oh, what's your dream job? My dream is to call a UFC Fight for the Troops, right? Because I haven't been able to. I think we've done four, and I have yet to get the call. So hopefully there's a chance at some point down the line. And hopefully everybody, if it applies, is getting some family time today. Any family time for you on the birthday, kid? I mean, kind of went dark on the birthday. I understand as you get a little bit older. Nothing fun about it, man. Like, I mean, I'm, as is well documented, I hated my 40th birthday, and 41 is right around the goddamn corner.
That's funny, dude. We went out to Joshua Tree. We went camping with the little one, actually.
How about that? Overnight?
And overnight, dude, two nights. We did two nights in Joshua Tree. It got a little cold. But we prepared appropriately, I think, and the baby did great. I mean, she's such a trooper, dude. She's amazing. We were in tents and dealing with the cold and then the hot during the day in Joshua Tree. We survived. I'm 43 years old, but I gotta say, I think I would beat the living shit. I would beat the living shit out of 28-year-old Ken Flo. I believe it.
I think there are a lot of fighters that you think you could probably still beat the shit out of. But that back would hold up. Well, that's great that you went and did the camp. Please tell me you didn't, like, rush back for the Anik and Florian podcast.
Of course I did.
I can just see Clark. Really, bro? You didn't bring your laptop? We got to go all the way home to do the Anik and Florian podcast? No, of course not. So we did not get a chance last week to recap the UFC Rochester show. So just want to treetop that a little bit before we get to the main event challenge and then eventually Ray Longo. So Rafael Dos Anjos in the main event, a winner by submission round four over Kevin Lee. And I guess the conversation, Kenny, now 9 to 10 days removed from the fight, is probably as much about the win and the fight itself as it is sort of a career retrospective on Rafael Dos Anjos, because this win added to the rest of them is a really big deal for a really good guy.
Dos Anjos is a tremendous fighter. I thought that he did a great job of surviving that early blitz from Kevin Lee. I think him and his team and all of us really expected that. I expected that Kevin Lee was going to keep a tough pace in that fight. The problem is that I think, unfortunately, I'm trying to be as clinical about this as possible, and this is without bias. I just think that we found out a lot of things about Kevin Lee that I think was really confirmed in this fight, and is that he needs to get better technically, that you can't rely on just your conditioning to get it done against a guy like Rafael dos Anjos, who has been there, has seen it all, has been in there with some very large welterweights since he's moved up. And Kevin Lee just didn't provide that same kind of challenge that a Kamaru Usman or a Colby Covington was able to present against Rafael dos Anjos. And dos Anjos just seemed to be better everywhere. And Kevin Lee, and I think dos Anjos got caught up emotionally or in the pocket, kind of trading a little bit, taking unnecessary shots. But I feel like Kevin didn't really understand the range so much. He was just trading and throwing shots, not really setting it up, not really aware of the range. And those shots from dos Anjos were really, I think, wearing down on him. And not to mention dos Anjos' ability to stop the takedowns and even go for some takedowns himself. I think that was really frustrating Kevin Lee throughout.
The end seemed kind of anticlimactic as well. Not much resistance on the choke, obviously, from Kevin Lee. In some respects, putting himself in a bad position, not necessarily forced by Rafael dos Anjos. So what is at the core for Kevin Lee, since you sort of went there? I mean, is it a cardio issue? Is it trying to figure out how to go, you know, to manage not just risk, but cardio over 25 minutes? Is it a, you know, I know, is it a Robert Fallis issue? I mean, I know he is only three fights removed from losing his head coach. I mean, what is at the core here of the problem for Kevin Lee in your mind?
Well, John, you know, not having Robert Fallis there, is definitely going to hurt him, because this was a Kevin Lee that I didn't see any adjustments or improvements in his game. I saw Kevin Lee that, in fact, looked worse. So that could absolutely be a factor. I think that's a great thing to note there. But more than anything else, he needs to improve technically. He didn't show that he's aware of proper range and proper setting up of strikes. He wasn't fainting his way in, really getting in, getting out. He was just in the pocket like he was hitting a heavy bag. The problem is that heavy bag in dos Anjos was hitting him right back. The other thing is, you know, I think we've talked about this before, Kevin Lee is an athlete. He's not necessarily a Tony Ferguson type figure where he doesn't care if he's going to lose a limb. He doesn't care if he's going to get knocked out. He will pursue through, the garden of punishment no matter what. Kevin Lee just seemed to get tired and mentally, physically, spiritually didn't have it. And that's okay. That's fine. But you can't fight like that if you know that you don't have the mental fortitude to push through. So I think there was a failure of really going out there with a proper game plan. Going out there, and I've done the same thing. I've done this stupid idea, too, of going, well, I'm just going to pressure BJ Penn, and I expect him to break. That does not fucking happen. Right. You got to go in there with some kind of technical game plan. If you're going in there expecting a dude to fail, you will fail yourself at some point. Maybe not that fight, but eventually. You got to go in there with skills and more than just one game plan, hoping for the other guy to just fail. And a guy like dos Anjos just isn't going to do that at this point in his career. Dos Anjos still has it. He's still hungry and came away with a great win over Kevin Lee. And Kevin Lee's going to have to rethink things now. Again, he's in between weight classes. We've talked about that as well. But if he wants to fight at 170 pounds, he either needs to put a lot more weight on, or he's going to have to get way better technically.
I think he'll probably push the reset button again and go back to 155 pounds and really try to get himself in a position where he gets so far ahead of the weight cut and maybe just making some wholesale changes, not unlike we saw Yancy Medeiros did. I'm not saying you got to go vegan, but, you know, really major lifestyle type changes if he's going to try to be a lightweight contender, because it's amazing how much the narrative has changed over the last three or four fights for Kevin Lee. I mean, I don't think this one stings as much as losing the Iaquinta rematch necessarily, but And while there was some good in this performance, I think for Kevin Lee, a lot of questions to be answered. I think at times he questions his own style, right? And at times maybe he wishes his style was a little more entertaining, not to say that he isn't an entertaining fighter, but at times I think the way he needs to fight in a five-round fight is not the way he would like to fight. But we'll see what happens with Kevin Lee. As far as RDA is concerned, and Luke Thomas did a really nice job shining the light on RDA last week. The wins list, Kenny, and Kevin Lee, too, is going to be a problem, I still think, for a lot of guys out there, right? So it looks good on the wins list. So Kevin Lee, Robbie Lawler, these are RDA's wins. Donald Cerrone times two, so two wins over the guy who has more UFC wins than anyone. Anthony Showtime Pettis, a finish of Benson Henderson, the main event. Nate Diaz, some welterweights, to your point, Neil Magny, Tarek Safadine. Flo, I mean, people hate when I say future Hall of Famer. But tell me how this guy, who started 0-2 and now has 18 UFC wins, a lightweight championship, a defense of the belt. You know, I'm not putting him in Canton, okay? But pretty impressive body of work for Dos Anjos, for sure.
Without a doubt, I think it's silly to think that he's not going to be a future Hall of Famer. He's done a lot of great things in this sport. I love Rafael Dos Anjos. I think that he's as well-rounded as they come. You look at a guy who has evolved over the course of career of his career and how he's improved, coming in primarily as really a jiu-jitsu guy. Then he really worked on his striking. He went to Thailand, yep. and improved that aspect of his game, then really improved his wrestling, then now has really improved his boxing as well. Now, I don't think this was his best performance per se. I actually think that Dos Anjos was far superior on a technical level than Kevin Lee was. I think Kevin Lee was trading in the pocket and Dos Anjos obliged, and I thought that was a very dangerous approach. Perhaps he got a little emotional and just, you know, felt more comfortable in there. But again, a win is a win. Kevin Lee is a tough guy. And I think Dos Anjos did exactly what he needed to do in the later rounds to get the win, got Kevin Lee extremely tired, right, and finished him when he should have. And I think Dos Anjos is even better than what he showed against Kevin Lee.
I
couldn't agree with you more that this is a future Hall of Famer.
And Jason Perillo in the corner, even after round one, he sort of seemed to intimate the game plan here is to extend this guy, right? It wasn't their cleanest effort for sure, but enough to get another finish. So 18-9 in the UFC for Rafael Dos Anjos. And I think sometimes, you know, historically speaking, in other sports, the way Hall of Famers are revered, when you talk about a guy with nine losses, maybe that hurts his candidacy and why people give me the Heisman when I bring up that conversation. You know, point of comparison, Rashad Evans has eight losses, right? A lot of those came at the tail end, but he didn't even defend the light heavyweight title, right? So this wasn't the conversation I was intending to have today, but, you know, I think on the merits of the body of work, he's in for me.
Without a doubt, look at the guys that he's beaten. Just the fact that he's gone out there and been the champ at 155 pounds. So again, you know, we've talked about so many times that it is the most difficult division in the sport. That alone warrants the merit of a future Hall of Famer, and the guy continues to have a lot of success at welterweight now.
Yes, I agree too, right? I mean, present company, a little biased, but that's
okay. Exactly.
So I don't want to spend too much more time on the Rochester show, but we got to give Ian Heinisch a little bit of love for ending the winning streak of Shoeface Antonio Carlos Jr. You know, I said a couple weeks ago it was the fight on the card that I was most looking forward to. A lot of high expectations for Shoeface. He started to live up to them and then ran into another guy that people are very high on. Ian Heinisch gets the biggest win of his career there in New York.
Heart, determination, conditioning seem to be the recipe here as well for Ian Heinisch. You know, I got to say, though, you know, for Shoeface, I think this was also the case for me, I think, in my career, is that sometimes when you're working on the other aspects of your game, the thing that got you to the dance, your jiu-jitsu in this case, sometimes you lose some of those core fundamentals. Some of those things that you do well start to kind of fade away. You lose the luster on them. And I got to say, I saw that here with Shoeface. Didn't seem so clean with his grappling on the ground, was making a lot of fundamental mistakes. But again, that does not take away from Ian Heinisch's toughness, his ability to just be brutal on the ground and just seemed tougher on the feet, was landing heavy shots, and did a great job of really stopping a lot of those takedown attempts from Shoeface. Shoeface just not efficient with his grappling, not efficient on the feet with his wrestling, and just got absolutely exhausted, and Ian Heinisch made him pay when he needed to.
There is a serious hunger that burns inside Sian Heinisch, and if you know his story, then you know why it burns in some respects. And if you don't, I suggest you Google it. But a guy who conceivably could conceivably not be here right now, and he is just chasing UFC greatness and a big feather in his cap. And all of a sudden, right, you get a win over a guy like that, you're ranked, and you're getting a big fight next. So congratulations to Ian Heinisch. Congratulations to Frankie Edgar, who is getting a title shot against Max Holloway at UFC 240. So Frankie Edgar's last shot at any undisputed title, UFC 156 in 2013. He did have the interim featherweight opportunity against Jose Aldo, I believe UFC 200. But this is a long time coming if you're Frankie Edgar. We will certainly get to Alexander Volkanovski and all of this because he feels passed over and in the worst of ways in a lot of respects. But your thoughts on Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway and the fresh matchup that is likely to headline UFC 240.
You know, a lot of people have a problem with this because of the Volkanovski situation, which we'll get into later, but I'm very happy for Frankie Edgar. I think this is warranted. This guy is a true legend of the game, and here he is with an opportunity to win a second belt in a second weight class. The former champ at 155 pounds, Frankie Edgar, has a game that Max Holloway really hasn't had to deal with a lot in his career at 145 pounds. This is a wrestler, a guy who knows how to get on the inside and get out. This is a guy who knows how to stick to game plans. This is a guy who moves very well, is a smart fighter, has a ton of experience, and can really pose a lot of problems for a Max Holloway. And in a lot of ways, it's an interesting fight because Volkanovski gets a chance to look at a similar fighter in Frankie Edgar and say, all right, I'm gonna adjust on the game plan of what he did right and what he did wrong, assuming Frankie Edgar, you know, either whether he gets it done or whether he isn't able to. I think it's a great way for Volkanovski to see kind of what's going to work here against Max Holloway because they are very similar fighters. But for Max Holloway, I think if you look at one thing where he hasn't been so challenged, it's in the takedown realm.
Sure.
And Frankie Edgar can certainly do that and make a lot of fighters look bad. You look at some of his performances against guys like Cub Swanson, who's a tremendous striker who moves really well. He's very dangerous. And Frankie Edgar just always kept him off balance and found a way to put him on his back. And I'm certain that's what he's going to try to do here against Max Holloway.
Yeah, no doubt it's a compelling stylistic matchup. In some respects, I think it was made because Max Holloway is trying to turn this thing around quickly after the loss to Dustin Poirier in April, and power to Max, too, right,
for
wanting to get right back in there and right that wrong in a lot of respects. As far as Volkanovski is concerned, I think the biggest downside would be obviously a Frankie Edgar win because that would propel a potential rematch against Max Holloway, and then the timeline really starts to get away from you. This was a decision that was made absent of Volkanovski's blood infection, and we'll detail that in a second. I just want to read these quotes from Alexander Volkanovski's coach Eugene Behrman, because there are a lot of people in Australia and beyond who really aren't happy that Volkanovski went to Rio, beat the number one contender, and is not getting a title fight. This is Eugene Behrman, courtesy of Submission Radio. Gutted mate, absolutely livid. Like, we talked about this for such a long time. We talked about it. Our team talked about it. Our goal was to set this scenario up. And for all our knowledge, this is what the UFC was looking for. This is what they wanted. They needed Volko to win that fight, needed Adesanya to get into position. And then we've got an Australasian supercard set up, all because of the work that we put in, the position that we put ourselves into, yada, yada, yada. So obviously he's pretty upset about it, and rightfully so, right? Because Frankie Edgar has the win over Cub Swanson, which came about 6 weeks after he lost to Brian Ortega. That was April of 2018. But Volkanovski, you know, I laugh because he's won 17 in a row. He's 7-0 in the UFC, and he just did the Mendez-Aldo bang, you know? So in terms of body of work on paper, it's like, what else does Volko need to do, Kenflo?
He needs to do nothing. I mean, he's done it all. This is a guy with another interesting style, like I said, similar to a Frankie Edgar, who could pose a lot of problems for the champ Max Holloway. Volkanovski has done everything he needed to do. Again, he really surprised me in that fight against Aldo, really just took Aldo's heart and threw it into the Brazilian crowd. I mean, Volkanovski is an absolute beast. And the fact that he was able to do it and probably was dealing with that blood infection perhaps during that fight against Aldo. I mean, that's very strange that it came up the day after. I mean, he must have been dealing with it before, which really can sap your energy, can sap your strength. And the fact that Volkanovski was able to get it done and do it impressively just makes that guy that much more of a beast. But listen, timing is everything in this sport. And a lot of times the UFC goes in a completely different direction than is expected. And I think as fighters, you kind of have to deal with that. As a team, you kind of have to know that. It doesn't make it any easier to deal with. But again, I think there's a silver lining here. I think for Volkanovski, he can learn a lot from this fight of either Holloway or Frank Yedger, and kind of sit back, watch the fight. Him and his team can make the analysis and come up with a great game plan either for Frank Yedger or for for Max Holloway. I think there is a silver lining. It's going to push things back. But as you said, sometimes, you know, injuries and other timing, if Frankie Edgar wins that fight, that's going to push it back a little bit more. But I think Volkanovski has really established himself as the number one guy in that division. I don't see a whole lot of other threats to him besides Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway. So he's going to have to sit back and wait. But again, this is something that other guys like Dustin Poirier, Tony Ferguson,
of course,
have had to deal with.
Of course. No, it's a long list of guys for sure. And I do think Volkanovski's next fight is going to be for the undisputed title or for an interim title, but hopefully in his case, an undisputed title shot, you know. And I think, too, he's the type of guy that just wants to, you know, rugby league style run through a brick wall and maybe on the heels of this blood infection to take this fight. You know, with a 6-week or whatever, 8-week abbreviated training camp wouldn't have been the most ideal circumstance, you know.
Without a doubt. And listen, as good as this 145-pound division is, I think they also struggle in the name department. And Frankie Edgar is one of, if not the biggest name at 145 pounds besides Max Holloway. You look at what he's accomplished, you know, on paper and the fact that he's been in some of the biggest fights at 145 and 155 pounds. I think it's a fight that the UFC probably went in that direction because of that history. So Volkanovski doesn't perhaps have the name of a Frankie Edgar yet. Maybe that's why they went in that direction as well.
And real quick on the Volkanovski infection, and you mentioned how hard it might be to fight and compete and cut weight and everything else with that type of infection. He's lucky he's still alive, right? When you look at the details and what airplanes and altitude can do when you're fighting something like this. This is Volkanovski to ESPN, and Ken Flo will be on video in a few weeks, but he's just shaking his head because he knows all too well. And especially, too, when you got kids, they get these infections, dude. I mean, shit happens really quickly if you don't get on top of it. This is Volkanovski on what happened, you know, shortly after going on the plane. It was too hard for them to tell, I think, the extent of the injury or virus because he was injured because of the trauma from the kicks. Once I went on the plane, it went crazy, and obviously I just started feeling really crook. Then I went on the next flight, and that's when it really hit me, 40-plus degrees Celsius temperatures. Goes on to say, I could have lost the leg, lose your life. Very, very serious. Thankfully, it didn't get to that stage. But antibiotics didn't work straight away. They were really worried about it hitting his tendons and bones because it was very close. And, of course, once it goes there, you can have some serious problems. So, man, you know, and the thing, too, is, right, you find yourself in these situations, right? He was admitted to a hospital in Chile after fighting in Brazil, right? And you just trust that all the, you know, I'm not like Kenfel. I don't speak six languages, right? You're in a hospital surrounded by people who are trying to save your life in a different language. Scary stuff, man.
That has to be extremely scary. Absolutely. I can't even imagine that is dangerous stuff when you're talking about these infections, whether it's staph or these blood infections. You know, it being on a plane and having to deal with that, I mean, that is just craziness. But I'm glad he was able to get out and get healthy, and wish him a continued recovery. But that is definitely some scary stuff. I've dealt with some infections before a fight, and you just don't feel the same or fight the same. Volkanovski's a beast, man. I'm glad he's okay.
Thankfully, he is okay. He is getting better, and he is home with his beautiful family. All right, main event challenge coming up in 60 seconds. First, though, this from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. I'm not going very far. I'm in a rush. It's too uncomfortable. Sometimes I just forget. Don't kid yourself. There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. If you've used any of these excuses or any others, you're putting yourself at risk of injury or death. In 2017, more than 10,000 people were unbuckled when they were killed in crashes. That's 51% of people killed in motor vehicle crashes that were not wearing seatbelts. No matter what kind of vehicle you drive, wearing your seatbelt is the best defense in a crash. Even when you sit in the back seat, you still need to buckle up. That goes for when you ride in taxis and use ride-sharing services too. Cops are on the lookout and writing tickets, so why take the risk? In 2017 alone, seatbelts saved nearly 15,000 lives. So do the smart thing and buckle up. Every trip, day or night. Click it or tick.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Flory.
I finished fight! I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, so at one point, Team Anik led this thing by like 17 or so. Not really thrilled with the squad of late Ken Flo. Ian Parker, chief among them. He's on hold. We'll get to him in a second. It was 61-48 going into UFC Rochester. Team Florian wins his fifth consecutive week. 4-2, the swing fight. Kenny Florian had Rafael Dos Anjos as a slight underdog. So it is now 63-52 going into UFC Stockholm. You take the week 4-2, kid.
Chipping away, dog. Chipping away. The kid's coming.
He's just coming.
It's still early. I got what? 6 months still?
it's amazing the way you do this. Five consecutive winning weeks. Unbelievable. As we welcome in Ian Parker. Ian, not a great start to this partnership, but the beauty is, in your system, you get another crack this week, my man. It's good to have you back. How are you?
You know, it's. I guess you're only as good as your last fight. And if it wasn't for Mr. Lee, I think I would have actually been flawless. So, Kenny, you got lucky that Neil Magny didn't want to come fight that day.
I'm telling you, dude. Wow.
All right, let us get to it. It is UFC Fight Night, Gustafsson versus Smith, June 1st. Stockholm, Sweden. I believe this is a wall-to-wall job on ESPN+. We begin with a good one in the featherweight division. Chris Fishgold, favored here at a minus 125 clip against Makhwan Amirkhani, who is plus 105. Fishgold, 18-2-1 overall. Ian Parker, he is the favorite. Give it to me straight. Who do you like here?
Yeah, you know what? This is the odds are kind of spot on right here. You know, Amirkhani is someone who is a potential prospect for a while. I just don't like the inconsistency in his the time that he fights. Seems like he only fights once a year for a long time. I think Fishgold, since his last loss, has only gotten better. I think his strengths play really well to Mirkani's weaknesses. I'm going to keep this one pretty simple. I think that Fishgold is going to grind the decision out, play it safe here. I think he out-cardios, out-hustles, and he gets the win.
All right, Ian Parker going with Fishgold out of Liverpool, England. He's got some hype behind him. Ken Flo submitted Daniel Tamer in February. 13th career submission, 12th by a choke of some kind. Makhwan Amirkhani on the other side. I was surprised to see this. You know, more UFC tested in this equation for sure, but 4-1 in the UFC so far, coming off a split decision win over Mississippi Mean Jason Knight. That was over a year ago, May of 2018. Amirkhani, the underdog, or Fishgold, the favorite for you, kid?
You know, I think Amirkhani is one of those guys that I've been a little disappointed by how he's developed because he is such a great athlete, and I expected a lot more. Even in his wins, sometimes he just has you grinding your teeth. Like, is this guy going to pull it off? Like, why is he making this so hard? Sometimes the decision-making out there, and again, you know, that's because he is kind of starting off his career still and still getting his bearings in the UFC, but I expected him to be a little bit more further along in his career. Fishgold, I think, can get it done, just like Ian Parker said. Or I could actually see Fishgold getting a submission win over Amirkhani as well. So I'm going with Fishgold.
Do you know how much Ian Parker loves when you're dropping that Parker and not just calling him Ian? I mean, Kenny Florian knows your last name, bro. I mean, look at this.
You know what? I'm going to have to just go down like the route of like Sinbad. I think I'm just going to drop the Ian at this point. And just go Parker.
Yeah.
I think it just carries so much more weight.
Like Bono or Sting. Yes. I like it.
Yeah, I don't know why I went Sinbad. I could have went so much more memorable, but I went Sinbad. I don't know.
That's funny. Okay. All right, so two guys on Fishgold there. Price is short if you do like that side. All right, featured bout at light heavyweight. Top prospect Alexander Rokic, minus 220. Jimmy Manoa, the plus 180 underdog. Ian Parker, we will have you lead once again. Rokic or the poster boy Jimmy Manoa for you?
Love leading. Kenny wouldn't have it any other way. so, Jimmy Manoa, another guy who's, Manoa, sorry, has been very, again, disappointing, I guess, for the most part. He's one of those guys. He's either going to knock you out or get knocked out. And I feel like the longer he's been in the UFC, he has fought a higher level of competition, but he's just, his technicality has gotten so far away from him that he just likes to slug it out. He believes that his power will do it, and it's showing not to be the case. I think the prospect gets it done here. I do think he's what I hope he does do, because if you want to slug it out with Jimmy, it's not the best idea. Jimmy's power, as I stated, is really, really good. But I think if he stays technical, which he can, I think if he uses his jiu-jitsu, he's got a couple of sub wins in his career, you know, and also Jimmy's cardio is really not good. I like Rakic here. I really do appreciate this is a very interesting fight. Also, kind of, he's not too far into his career in the UFC. This will be a test. I think he gets it done. I think the odds are, I didn't expect him to be -220, you know, but I would still take him. I'm good with that pick.
Ken Flo, the Austrian Rakic, getting Vegas' respect. He's won 11 in a row since dropping his pro debut, 3-0 in the UFC, knockout of Devin Clark late last year. He trains at American Top Team, and here tries to hand Jimmy Manoa a fourth consecutive loss. Ken Flo, who you got?
This is a tough one. Listen, I do think that Manoa has the ability to knock this guy out. I think this is his toughest win on paper. I think he's got wins over Bajoso and Justin Ledet and Devin Clark in the UFC so far. And it's impressive, his consistency as of late. But, you know, those aren't guys that are really – that have a skill that you have to be worried about necessarily. Sure. They're kind of good all the way around, but not as dangerous as, say, a Manoa on the feet, who truly has knockout power. But I got to say, what Ian said, I think he's onto something here. It concerns me that Manoa is a little bit later on in his career, kind of at the end of his career, and I don't see that hunger getting ramped up at this point. I'm not sure he's going to have that same approach to training for a fight like he did before. I think Manoa's going to either try to knock him out, or he's just going to get taken down, or, you know, I don't know. I think for Rakic, he'll probably get the decision to win.
It was all about that Thiago Santos fight for Jimmy Manoa, right? Not all that long ago, and that one didn't go his way. So I see your point, right? It's hard to see Manoa being at the height of motivation, taking on a guy who I call a top prospect. And when I throw that designation out there, I'm saying like top prospect in the division, right? With respect to Dominic Reyes and the other guys, I think Rakic might be the guy who is the top young guy to keep an eye on going forward.
Yes.
All right. Co-main event. Former world title challenger Volkan Oezdemir, slight favorite here, -120 against the backyard shed Aleer Latifi, the even money underdog. Co-main event, Ian Parker, we will need the round and the method of victory. You going Oezdemir or Latifi?
All right, so I'm such a fan of Latifi just because he just seems like the nicest guy in the world, and his style is just really, really brutal. His wrestling, his slams, he's got heavy hands. Here's the problem. He has not fought, I don't think, anyone close to Volkan's level where they're at in their UFC careers, outside of coming on short notice and fighting Uzasi. You know, there's going to be a huge height advantage or reach advantage. You know, Volkan has fought guys like Daniel Cormier, so he has seen other wrestlers. And Latifi's just, his cardio is not really good either. He has been knocked out and dropped before. I think if Oezdemir can just keep his range here, pump his jab, and just not fight overly emotional, like he knows he's the best in the world. I mean, listen, that fight against Dominic Reyes, I don't know about Kenny, but I thought he won that fight. I didn't care either way. I actually did not bet on that fight, but I did think that Volkan won that fight, and that was a that loss for me told me so much about him that he still has it. You know, not too many guys obviously beat DC in the title fight. So I think based on the level of competition, I think the reach, his hands are way better. He's a much better boxer. If he can keep this fight on the feet, I'm going to say TKO round one for Oezdemir.
I agree with a lot of the latter part of your response there. You better hope Aleer Latifi does not listen to the Anakin Florian podcast, because that is not a guy.
There's no disrespect here, right?
Not a guy whose bad side you want to be anywhere near. But Oezdemir has dropped three in a row. You mentioned most recently to Dominic Reyes. The other losses, Daniel Cormier, Anthony Smith. Latifi had some momentum that was halted by Corey Anderson at UFC 232 last December. Ken Flo, loser of this fight, obviously in trouble when it comes to contention. You going Oezdemir or Latifi?
See, Ian, getting a little taste of what the Flo's got to deal with every single week, giving these breakdowns. You know, listen, I think Latifi is a very powerful guy. I think he is a better wrestler than Oezdemir. I think he hits harder, perhaps, than even Oezdemir. But, you know, those situations where he's getting in on your legs or he's landing those big shots, they're few and far between. You know, he's throwing a lot of overhand rights that you see coming. You know, with his ability to enter in on the legs, I don't think it's so clean. He doesn't know how to really integrate his striking to set up his takedowns. He's either just trying to shoot in from far away or trying to knock your head off. So I think Uzdemir is going to have the experience to see all of those things. I think Uzdemir showed a lot of that toughness that we've seen in his previous fights, in that last fight against Dominic Reyes, which I agree, he definitely could have won that fight. And again, it's no surprise. This is one of the toughest individuals you'll ever meet. You don't become Anthony Johnson's sparring partner, getting your butt kicked, to now giving him a really tough time at the end of his career, without being tough. So I think Uzdemir does get it done. I don't know if it will be by knockout, but I do need to give a round, right? Is that correct? Let's go with round two. Or no?
Yeah. New scoring system. I think that does require you to give us a round and a method of victory.
All right. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go with round. Let's go with round three TKO.
Round three TKO. And Ian, correct me if I'm wrong. You went round one.
I did.
Yes.
Good, because I don't want to fucking go back and listen. That's what I had to do this week. I had to go back and listen to the entire main event challenge. I went warp speed, double speed on both of you guys because I get enough of you guys during the week. All right, main event. UFC Stockholm, Alexander Gustafsson, the prohibitive favorite, minus 300. Anthony Lionheart Smith, plus 240. Of course, we will need the round and the method of victory as this is a five-round main event. Ian Parker, who wins the main event in Stockholm? How do they get it done?
Well, I just want to real quick react to your comment about hopefully that Latifi's not listening to this podcast. If Ariel Helwani hasn't gotten his ass kicked yet, I think I'm hopefully safe, or I'm just going to hide here and let Kenny handle my business for me. Okay, with this fight, I'm again a little shocked that UFC threw Anthony Smith so quickly back in and against this. It's I guess they really wanted that big of a marketable fight for Gus in this fight. It's interesting Anthony Smith's rise to the top. It was really just he was beating everyone they put in front of him really quickly, essentially legends that were on the decline, everyone that really played into his style. And when he got to that point where the style no longer played to his advantage, you kind of saw what happened. I think this one, he is fighting a way better, faster, more technical version of himself, I guess. I just think Gus is one of those guys that will always be a top three or four guy in that division. And outside of John and DC, I just don't know who really beats him. I don't think Anthony Smith is fast enough. I don't think I don't think Gus really makes bad decisions, and I think it's going to take a really bad mistake on his part to lose this. I know we got to pick a method of victory, right? So I'm going to say Gus wins this fourth round TKO.
Alexander Gustafsson, round four TKO. So you touched on Anthony Smith
this week.
You touched on Anthony Smith's schedule, Ian. So he beats Volkan Uzdemir last October. And, Kenny, I think you might have been on the desk 2 months later at Fox, December 29th, when he had the chance to interview John Jones.
Yes.
At that time, he asked John Jones for a fight in July of 2019. So, of course, that fight did not happen on Smith's timeline, obviously, as the challenger. That fight happens in March. Didn't go well for Anthony Smith at all. And now, before even that July target date that he wanted to fight John Jones on, he's getting a second five-round fight against another guy who's a top light, all-time light heavyweight. I think it's a huge ask for Anthony Smith here, Kenny, and I think the betting odds reflect that. Your thoughts on Anthony Smith and Alexander Gustafsson Saturday Night Live on ESPN Plus?
Yeah, listen, Anthony Smith is like a promoter's dream. He's only going to say yes. This guy's a warrior. Of course. Oh, who you want me to fight tomorrow? Yeah, no problem. I got this. that's the kind of guy that every promoter wants, right?
And every coach doesn't want, because at times Mark Montoya is like, bro, come on. Really? Do we have a little time to work on some skills?
Yeah, now you could put the Lionheart away, Anthony, okay? Just put it away. Save it for the fight.
Stop showing Where's up your the Lionheart,
lion? Yeah, stop. Yeah, put the Lionheart away. Listen, I think that this is a tough fight for him, man. Anthony Smith, I love the guy. He's one of the nicest, sweetest dudes you'll ever meet. But a true warrior through and through. And I think a lot of times our weaknesses are our strengths. And, I think that for Anthony Smith, he can get it done if Gustafson decides to just brawl with him and get stupid, but I just don't see that happening. Gustafson has tremendous boxing. He has excellent footwork when he's on point with it. When he's flowing, man, watch out. Gustafson can beat any fighter at 205 pounds in the world, and Anthony Smith usually enjoys that reach and height advantage. That's not going to be the case here against Gustafson. I don't like this matchup for him. I have so much respect for Anthony Smith, but I see a third-round knockout for Alexander Gustafson.
Third-round knockout for Alexander
Gustafson. This is like the Price is Right today.
Exactly. I can't go over.
Can't go over.
You know when Kempfo calls you a nice guy, that something not nice is coming next.
What a joke. Come on.
The term was sweet. He's a sweet guy.
Exactly. He's a sweet guy. See?
Ninth fight in 2.5 years for Anthony Smith, and we know Gustafson rematch with John Jones certainly didn't go according to plan. He did injure the groin in there, and he wasn't going to outwardly make that excuse, but maybe that's a silver lining for Gustafson. If he's healthy and sharp and on point, he's a 3-1 favorite against Anthony Smith, and that's exactly how it is on paper as Gus tries to preserve his status as one of the best light heavyweights in the world. One of the best cappers in the world. I don't know that we're going to call Ian Parker that just yet, but we do appreciate your time. We will talk to you next week. By the way, guys, you know how many picks you're making for UFC 238?
How many?
Fucking 10.
No! Ian, you're going down, kid.
10? I like it.
10 picks. The entire main card, all 4 televised prelims. They're all big fights. The smallest fight, if you want to call it that you guys are going to pick, if you really want to know, because I prep in advance, Joanne Calderwood, Caitlin Chookagian. So 2 top 5 flyweights, I think they are, or close to it. That's the smallest, right? The least consequential fight, arguably, that you're going to pick. So 10 fights next week. Ian Parker, anything else before we let you fly, kid?
No, listen, I'm. It was kind of weird this weekend not having a UFC card this weekend. Feel a little left out, but looking forward to this week. And I missed you guys, man. I'm pumped we're back on this week. And Kenny, as much as I like you, I got to kick your ass this week, bro. John just got all over me for losing one fucking fight. One fight. So I got to crush you this week, bro.
Stay consistent for me.
Dude's coughing.
Can't even lose one. Got to go undefeated the rest of the year. Got it. No problem.
Dude's coughing during the segment, cutting me off. I mean, you are right at home right away.
Oh, I didn't even hear you. Did I cut you off? My apologies.
I'm just kidding around. Wait, I think we prefer the cough. Then the car door, but you know, it is what it is.
Who was coughing? I wasn't coughing.
No, of course not. You're the only Jew I've ever met that doesn't smoke marijuana. You know,
I mean, not anymore. Ian Parker. But yes, that's true. Wow, we're look who's at home right now.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm underslept. All right, Ian. Great stuff, buddy. Love you. We'll talk to you next week.
It's all good. This is great. All right, man. Thanks, guys.
All right, we got to get out of here because Ray Longo is waiting. Let's get to the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Oh, I need more Ray Longo in my life. That's why he's been a weekly staple of this show since episode 1. Happy belated birthday, Ray Longo. We figured we'd cancel the show on your birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much for giving me the day off. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So you're older than me and Ken Flo. That's why we have you on the show, because we are fucking senior citizens already.
I got to tell you, I think I'm older than you and Ken Flo put together. That's how bad it gets.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but it's going to be close.
So I've been thinking a lot about Aljamain Sterling over the last couple weeks because it all comes down to June 8th, right? And this is an opportunity on a night that will showcase the 4 best bantamweights in the world that Aljo gets Pedro Munhoz and gets to stamp himself the undisputed number one contender. And I do believe on any given Saturday night you have the guy who might be the best bantamweight in the world. You're about 2 weeks out. Do you share my enthusiasm? I'm really excited for your guy to show. Why are you laughing at me now? Jesus Christ.
Who can see your enthusiasm? You're so enthusiastic. You take enthusiasm to another level. I can't match that enthusiasm, even with my own guys. That's why you're such a great announcer.
Is it because you don't want to give away the game? I'm not asking for the game plan. I'm just asking if you're excited.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm very excited, too. He just left. He had a great training today with a lot of people, so it was good. I agree exactly what you're saying, and I think it's a good fight for Aljo. You know, we looked at a bunch of the guys' fights and stuff, so I'm excited, man. It is a big deal. I think he understands it's a big deal, and Man, June 8th can't come quick enough.
I did see Pedro Munhoz in Rio, and he seemed to intimate that if Cejudo or Moraes was unable to go, that he and not Aljo would be the guy that would get that short-notice championship opportunity. I'd imagine you don't want to add anything to that narrative. Is Aljo being told something similar, or we don't know?
That's interesting. Well, we've talked about it. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know who that is, but why does he think he's the guy?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was just lost in translation by me. But I sort of was
Jimmy Rivera and Aljo beat Rivera. Is that the mentality? What is it, Kenny? What am I missing?
I wouldn't be surprised if the UFC told both of those people that. It's like, you know, the dude who's talking to two girls and he's like, yeah, just in case this one doesn't go right, I'm going to tell this one, tell the other one, right?
Who knows? But that's another good point, man. But I think Cejudo at 35 hasn't missed weight yet. So I think at 25, that would have been a better case scenario. But we'll see what happens, man. You know, it is funny because it happened with Al and somebody brought it up the other day. And, yeah, that definitely makes everything interesting.
So I was Googling Ray Longo before the show, just as part of my pre-show prep. I don't always Google you before the show, but I just want to read a quote that I came across. We're not talking about your IMDb page right now. I came across this quote on UFC.com. This is from Ray Longo in 2012. Once I opened up the school, I always put a heavy emphasis on boxing more than anything else. When I'm training guys, I force them to box to see how they deal with the adversity of getting hit. What you will get from boxing is the ability to endure punishment. It's not really how hard you can hit. It's how good you can take a punch. Boxing tests your courage. It tests your confidence. Some people can never get over the fear of getting hit in the face. That's just a problem. I've seen some guys who wrestle the first time a punch is thrown, they turn their head and run away. When you're doing jiu-jitsu, when you're doing wrestling, they're physically enduring pain on the body that gives you another whole set of skills. But the ability to take a shot, to take a hit, and keep on going is from boxing. And then you go on to say nothing's going to test your courage like boxing. Once you get used to absorbing the punishment and you've developed the timing of having a live opponent in front of you and the necessary footwork to evade an attack properly, I think you're building an awareness that translates over perfectly for MMA. So the legendary Ray Longo, it just was a great quote that stuck with me. So when you opened the gym, it was all about boxing at first glance.
Yeah, well, I know. I do believe that boxing – It tests your courage in a different way. Just like, you know, wrestling will just test your mental fortitude to have a guy grinding on you and you got to keep on going. This is, somehow people, you know, once you get used to rolling with punches and taking punches, it frees your mind up. It's something that you have to do, but and you want to do it in the right way because you don't want to, obviously, now with all the CTE and all that stuff, you got to be, you know, I think a little careful, at least, you know, cognizant of the fact that, you know, some stuff could be bad for you. But no, I don't think anything tests that because there's nothing to do. There's no place to go. You know, you got to fight back. You got to learn how to, you know, deal with the adversity of getting hit and controlling your breathing. And some guys never get comfortable with it. And some guys, they love to sit in the pocket and just do their thing. So, yeah, I think that what I said there, I would reiterate, you know, 8 years later or whenever the hell it was.
See, I mean, I've been punched in the face before hard, you know, like I didn't particularly like it, you know, but I sometimes will, you know, maybe somebody that I don't like in my life, I'll say, I don't know if that guy's ever been punched in the face. I think he would do well to get punched in the face. I think a lot of people look at me and be like, man, I would love to punch that guy in the face.
But you know how empowering it would be, John, for you to say, let's go, let's do it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And then once you take that off the table, then what do they have? You know,
right.
And I think that's the, you know, that's the beauty of it. And again, I'm not like, you know, promoting like violence like that, but it is a great way. I think everybody should do it. And like everybody done in the right manner. I think it's like, you know, like I wanted to do a thing years ago, you know, like Anthony Robbins says, walking over the coals. And I wanted to do like a motivational thing. And at the end, you know, you get taught, but you have to go in and spar a couple of rounds and deal with that. I think that's empowering. Way more than like walking over, you know, coals that, you know, a lot of scientists could come up with and tell you, you know, well, this is why, you know, you could do it and blah, blah, blah. There's no way getting out of that. Once you're in that ring or the door locks in the octagon, you got to face your fears. And if it's done constructively, I think it could be one of the most empowering things there is.
Yeah. No, I even thought taking a few jiu-jitsu classes was very empowering, you know? Doesn't mean I'm going to go back every Tuesday for the rest of my life, but it was very empowering being in there, you know?
Yeah. And I'll tell you, jiu-jitsu, I mean, I've seen Matt take guys that were just, like, ordinary. They're not playing any other sport, trust me. And they are phenomenal jiu-jitsu guys, and they'll latch onto your neck, and I don't care who you are, you're going out.
Right.
And that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu. But for self-defense, I think everybody should learn that, you know, for the other reasons with the boxing, you know. Look, it's like you get into a fight with a Vellante or a Weidman. I mean, what on the street, and you have no skill set, Kenny, what chance do you have?
Yeah, it's tough. There's no doubt about it.
Too.
Yeah.
You know, these are skilled guys that are used to taking a beating. I mean, I don't know. What do you do with them? You got to get lucky. Knock them out with one punch. What are you going to do? You're not going to out-wrestle them.
Right.
You're not submitting them. You know, I'm just saying you're the average, you know, tough guy in the neighborhood. That shit's gone.
Right.
You know,
no doubt. People
are really well-trained today, and it's that gets a little scary.
Yep.
Yeah, that cauliflower ear. Don't go anywhere near the guys with the cauliflower ear, you know.
That's what you got to spot. That's what you got to spot, for sure.
That's really why I want to wrestle and do jiu-jitsu, is I want that souvenir of a lifetime of repetitions in the game.
That's it. Kenny will put you in a headlock for a half hour. You're real to be perfect.
Kenny's not just that straight jiu-jitsu guy. World-class soccer skills underneath that.
If a soccer game breaks out, I'm good.
I'm good, dog.
Yeah, Kenny was awesome. The footwork, who'd you have? Peter Welch, who I really like a lot. I thought your footwork, your movement, you could punch and balance. I think he was awesome, man. You were a great fighter.
Thank you, man.
Oh, man, just such a good feeling all around. All right, man, well, unless you have anything else, next week, hopefully we'll go a little bit deeper on Sterling and Munoz, but I'm really excited and tell your guy we're excited for him, and maybe he'll crash the Ray Longo minute next week or something.
Oh, I think we'll do it. He's a really good dude, Alger. Now listen, when I get off the phone, you're not going to bash me that I didn't give you anything. What do you need?
No, I think we're good today. We're grabbing you on a federal holiday. I know you weren't available earlier, but we hung around the studio a little bit longer because we wanted to get you in. So thanks for breaking away for us, and we will talk to you in less than a week, my man.
Who's better than you guys?
It's a good question, Rick. You are. Thank you, buddy.
Definitely. Take it easy. Thanks, I'll talk to you. Bye.
There he is, the great Ray Longo. I think I'm so excited for that fight because I did get to spend a little bit of time with Pedro Munoz in Rio and just sort of getting ready for the next pay-per-view. It just is a huge event. You know, it feels like so these pay-per-views feel like Super Bowls to me in a lot of respects. And for Aljo, right, it's like you only get these chances, right, Kenny? Like, they only come around once in life, and he has to be the best bantamweight or one of them on June 8th. And if he isn't, then maybe it's just not going to happen for him in terms of becoming a UFC champion. And the magnitude of it, the stakes, it just, you know, gets my blood boiling.
Without a doubt, man. Listen, it's not impossible for him to come back if he doesn't get the win here, but certainly a lot of pressure on his shoulders for this one. This was one of those fights that definitely is do or die, and who knows what happens. And again, a lot of things can go wrong between now and when Moraes fights, and you know, who knows. The only thing that makes sense for Pedro Munoz is the fact that that Moraes does have that win over Aljo, sure, of course, which might put him in the front as a front runner there if something goes wrong with that fight. But who knows?
Championship doubleheader UFC 238 coming up June 8th. We will be back in a week to preview that for you. The only championship stakes tonight, though, Monday, May 27th, of course, the Stanley Cup final getting away in Boston, Massachusetts. And I'll try to say this as respectfully as possible. You know, I think people outside of Boston, even the ones who listen to this podcast, really are hoping that the St. Louis Blues can find a way, you know, because it's just been enough, right, for people outside Boston. It's just enough.
How do you stop them at this point? I mean, it's crazy. And again, you know, the Celtics, you know, they had their issues. But imagine if they were able to get – has a team won 4 world championships ever? Three.
Yeah, well, so
Detroit was the last team to get 3, right?
And there
was
1930s, right?
Yeah.
But I said, you know, my son was born June 23, 2018. I mean, you're going to tell me that they're going to win every single pro sports, the first 3 that are there to be won in his life? Unbelievable. But first things first, of course, they got to beat the St. Louis Blues. Best of luck to the Boston Bruins. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to Ray Longo, Ian Parker, of course, TJ DeSantis behind the glass, and of course to all of the fallen servicemen and women that we remember today, and ideally more days than just today. Thank you for making that ultimate sacrifice. Thank you all for listening to our show. We know you're out there. We appreciate that. For Ken Flo, the birthday boy, I'm John Anderson. So long for now. Have a great week. Enjoy the Stockholm show. We will talk to you in a few days. Until then, you'll later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.